The only game in town. Central banks, instability, and avoiding the next collapse. By Mohamed El Arian. What is needed is better finance, not more finance. The global financial crisis that shook virtually every country in the world in 2008 to 2009 gave way to the frustrating new normal of low growth, rising inequality, political dysfunction, and in some cases, social tensions, all despite massive policy interventions on the part of central banks and transformational technological innovations. Now, this new normal is getting increasingly exhausted. It becomes clearer that, rather than transition smoothly and automatically, the current path could give way to one of two very different new roads. The first promises higher inclusive growth and genuine financial stability. But in stark contrast, the second would see us mired in even lower growth, periodic recessions, and the return of financial instability. Fortunately, there is nothing predestined about what will come after the exhaustion of the new normal. The road out the upcoming T-junction can still be influenced in a consequential manner by the choices that we make. But to make better choices, we need to understand the forces at play and their likely evolution. There is no better way of doing so than through an examination of the world's major central banks, past, present, and future. The major catalyst for taking the good road out of the T is a combination of better politics and turbochargers. More constructive politics would enable the implementation of an engineering solution that already benefits from quite a bit professional consensus backing. This can happen if national policymaking in a few systematically important countries experiences a Sputnik moment that unites politicians behind a common vision and a national objective. Setting the stage. Parts of the global economy are healing and regaining their composure, led by the United States, but others, such as countries in Europe and Japan, continue to languish and are still away from decisively turning the corner. Meanwhile, a less than fully rehabilitated financial sector continues to deliver one anomaly after the other. These are not just confined to obscure technical corners. They are visibly relevant to you. Whether you're an investor looking for relatively safe returns on your savings, a small company looking for working capital, or a family looking to reclaim your financial destiny and establish a durable sense of long-term stability and security. There was a time when governments would pay you interest income in order to convince you to hold the bonds they issued to finance their spending averages. There was a time that banks would compete for your deposits. There was a time when society trusted the banking system's role in channeling loanable funds to productive uses, and society trusted the regulatory and supervisory skills of governments and central banks. And there was a time when the political system celebrated central banks, respecting their technical expertise and trusting them with enormous operational autonomy. This is less so today. On both sides of the Atlantic, there are recurrent political efforts to subject these influential institutions to greater oversight and auditing. The only game in town. In France's international symposium, Central Banking, The Way Forward, Christian Noyer, governor of France's central bank, verbalized upfront what many in the room viewed as the strength and weakness of modern-day central banking. Acknowledging that central banks have been considered the only game in town, he wondered whether the very high expectations placed on them might backfire in the future. The participants had no way of knowing that just a few weeks later, the world of central banking would be shaken. In the span of a few weeks, the Swiss National Bank would suddenly disseminate a key element of its exchange rate system, and do so in what proved to be an incredibly disruptive manner for markets. Singapore would alter its own exchange rate system, and Denmark would declare that it would refrain from issuing any more government bonds. The next few weeks would also witness a market collapse in government yields, including negative levels all the way out the 9-year point in the German yield curve, and the benchmark 10-year bond. They are trading at just 5 basis points, that is, 0.5%. They would see investors rush to buy many newly issued bonds directly from some European governments, agreeing to pay, rather than receive, interest income for doing so, and they would witness large banks actively discourage depositors from keeping money with them. Unconventional monetary policies. Ever since the 2008 global financial crisis, central banks had ventured ever deeper into the unfamiliar and tricky terrain of unconventional monetary policies. They floored interest rates, heavily intervened in the functioning of markets, and pursued large-scale programs that outcompeted one another in purchasing securities in the marketplace. To top it all off, they aggressively sought to manipulate investor expectations and portfolio decisions. To their credit, central bankers had not recognized early on that this course of action was not without risk and uncertainty. The use of unconventional monetary policy entailed not just benefits, but also costs and risks, and the longer such policy was in play, the greater the probability that the costs and risks would start outweighing the benefits. Central Bank's Communication Challenge. Central banks initially opted for public inflation targets, looking back on the history of an action that started a worldwide phenomenon. Neil Irwin of the New York Times observed that this seemingly little step constituted a huge communication revolution back then. At the time, the idea of a central bank simply announcing how much inflation it was aiming for was an almost radical idea. After all, central bankers had long considered a certain man-behind-the-curtain mystique as one of their tools of power. Another factor pushing for greater transparency involved the extent to which central banks were assuming greater power, responsibilities, and prominence, and with that, the realization that the potential costs and risk of political misunderstanding had grown concurrently. Moreover, the unrivaled power displayed by the subsequent move into unconventional policies involving trillion-dollar or euro expansions in balance sheets requires accountability towards politicians without caving into their short-term needs. The 10 Big Challenges. In normalizing and sprinting ahead to break record after record, financial markets had decoupled quite a bit from the more sluggish fundamentals, specifically since central banks' unconventional approach has a much larger impact on financial markets than on the real economy. Asset prices had surged to levels that by most measures were higher than what would be warranted by underlying economic and corporate conditions. The larger this decoupling got, the heavier the associated stress and strain on social cohesion, political coherence, and multilateral coordination. Here are the 10 big challenges. 1. Repeatedly inadequate and unbalanced economic expansion, reflecting cyclical or secular or structural headwinds, highlights the extent to which many advanced economies still lack proper growth models. 2. Unemployment remains too high in far too many advanced countries, and it is getting more deeply embedded in the structure of those economies and therefore will be much harder to solve. 3. Fueled by an unusual combination of cyclical, secular, and structural factors, the worsening of income and wealth inequality has been so pronounced within countries that it now also undermines opportunities. 4. The loss of institutional credibility is part of a more generalized erosion of trust in politicians and the system as a whole. 5. National political dysfunction is still a headwind to overcome economic malaise and restoring genuine and durable financial stability. 6. As national dysfunction undermines global policy coordination, traditional core or periphery relations fail and geopolitical tensions escalate. 7. With systemic risks migrating from banks to non-banks and morphing into the processes, regulators are again challenged to get ahead of future problems. 8. When the market paradigm changes, as it inevitably will, the desire to reposition portfolios will far exceed what the system can accommodate in an orderly fashion. 9. Yet none of these uncertainties and fluidities seem to disturb financial markets that, operating with unusually low volatility, went from one record to another. As such, the contrasting gap between financial risk-taking and economic risk-taking has never been so wide. 10. All of this adds up to considerable headwinds for the better managed part of national, regional, and global systems. Translating awareness into optionally resilience and agility. Lots of researchers have provided us with tools that may be used to enhance diversity and to reduce errors in judgment and decision-making that come from blind spots and unconscious biases. They involve elements of behavior modification that speak to communication, talent development and acquisition, performance measurement and performance evaluation. They also speak to the importance of combining the right mix of perspectives and heuristics together with strong support systems. In effectively transforming awareness into action, there is an important need to customize the approach to the particulars of the application case. Where will we end up? Where we actually end up is still a function of choice rather than destiny. Much will depend on the willingness and ability of governments to join central banks in more responsible policymaking at the national, regional, and multilateral levels. But this doesn't mean that the rest of us should be passive observers. There's a lot we can and should do to help improve these prospects for good outcomes, in the process also increasing our ability to better navigate bad outcomes should the world come out of the T on the wrong road.